understanding animism and evangelizing animists. As we seek to put feet to faith in this Great Commission course, we need to consider animism. On one of my overseas ministry trips, an in-flight documentary caught my attention. Some anthropologists were waxing eloquent about the incredibly advanced Mayan civilization of Central America in the 15th century. They did not have a written language, but they were incredibly advanced. These Mayans built spectacular pyramid-like temples, all without the wheel. Of course, there's a few slave labor to build these with moving all those impressive stones, but the slaves were captured from neighboring tribes. Unfortunately, these impressive temples were used for human sacrifices, but the human sacrifices were necessary to make the sun rise each day. But they only used slaves and prisoners captured from neighboring tribes for the sacrifices. And none of this seems to have dampened the enthusiasm of this anthropologist as he described the amazing, complex, intricate Mayan civilization. They had a fascinating sport, which is a cross between our basketball and football, although you can only use your shoulder to score a goal. Unfortunately, the losing team all put it in. And so it carried on. I could only wonder at the mental gymnastics, the ethical gymnastics of this anthropologist and film presenter in order to praise the incredibly advanced Mayan civilization, which had not yet discovered the wheel. How advanced can they be if they haven't got a wheel? Did not have a written language, used slave labor, engaged in human sacrifice, routinely execute the losing sports teams. What's there to praise? Why are they lifting this up as something that we should admire? Required viewing for all anthropology students should be the Apocalypto film, because this gives one a glimpse into the reality of the very callous, vicious, so-called civilization of minds, which enslaved and brutalized and ripped out beating hearts of people, all to make the sunrise each day. During a visit to the Field Museum in Chicago, I saw a similar display of reverence for paganism. Part of one exhibit included the cover of an old Time magazine, Lost Tribes, Lost Knowledge. The cover was of a primitive tribesman from Papua New Guinea, the very people amongst whom you saw the film on Itau recently, those kind of groups, with a bone through his nose. The subtitle read, "Treasure Troves of Scientific Knowledge Are Being Lost by Tribes Going Extinct." Now, I wonder what scientific knowledge could be possessed by tribes without a written language. But close examination revealed that these tribes are going extinct because the work of Christian missionaries, like Wycliffe Bible translators and New Transmission. As these tribes were evangelized and they were coming to Christ, they were abandoning the old tribal religions of headhunting and cannibalism and spirit worship and polygamy. To the scientists, these tribes are going extinct because they no longer walk around naked. They no longer engage in body scarification, tattooing, and body piercing. Now they wore clothes and they wore glasses. Instead of going to the witch doctor, they went to the doctor. And they're learning to read. And they only married once. And they worship in church. Ew. Horrible. Being somewhat ignorant of the science of anthropology, I would have thought that ending intertribal genocide and cannibalism and polygamy and occultism, I would have thought that was a good thing. I would also assume that giving people a gift of literacy and medicines to improve their health and extend their life expectancy, and improving people's sight with glasses, and bringing them the life-transforming gospel of Christ, I would have thought all this was preferable to allowing them to languish in superstition, ignorance, and animistic fear. But no, as National Geographic articles bemoaned the cultural genocide, imagine, cultural genocide of New Transmission and Wycliffe Bible translators and other missions in the Amazon jungles, they pointed out that these missionaries are destroying the cultural distinctives of unique tribal cultures. Apparently, it's preferable to have illiteracy, polygamy, incessant tribal warfare, cannibalism, human sacrifices, slavery, high infant mortality, and low life expectancies not to mention people dying without the knowledge of Christ. Just so journalists and anthropologists can have the more interesting and financially lucrative photo ops of naked savages engaging in body scarification and the eating of the natives. Romans 1:21 says, "For although they knew God, and they neither glorified him as God, nor gave thanks to him, but their thinking became futile, and their foolish hearts were darkened." So we need to understand, what is animism? Animism is spirit worship. It is the primary religion of the 100 million tribal people scattered throughout Africa, New Guinea, the Pacific Islands, North and South America, Australia, New Zealand, India, and Japan. That's according to Operation World 2010 edition. Elements of basic animism are also adhered to, in addition to those 100 million, by some Muslims, Buddhists, and nominal Christians. There are many who would claim to be Christians, Muslims, or Buddhists, but their primary allegiance really is to animism. And so you could see that, in fact, animism is far more influential than just the 100 million official animists in the world. And it influences even Hollywood films today. And you can see how it influences us in our cultures today. You have New Zealand. Their official team, their rugby team, does the haka, which is it's a demonic witchcraft dance, basically saying, we're going to eat you. It's putting a curse on the air. It's a witchcraft dance, this haka. It's completely occultic. It's demonic. And honestly and truly, to think, to see white New Zealanders performing the haka. Absolutely pathetic. Do these people have no knowledge of history, no spiritual discernment? Are they that apostate that they can engage in this kind of thing? I've seen these creeps doing the haka at even a New Zealand military detachment was sent to Belgium to the Ypres Memorial Gates, where every evening there is the last post sound and they read the names of soldiers who died on that day at that battlefield in the First World War. And this New Zealander sent a military detachment who performed the haka at this Christian war memorial in memory of Christians who died. And the haka is a witchcraft, occultic curse to be placed upon the enemies. Absolutely shocking. Now here is from Patrick Johnson, Operation World, but this is not an Operation World, this is this Global Church book. The green represents Islam, the yellow represents Christian, and the blue represents animism or witchcraft. And basically you can see according to the intensity of the color whether it's a higher percentage or lower, and it can go from a higher percentage of 90, above 90% for the darkest, down to below 40% for the lighter. But you can see how witchcraft is majorly adhered to in much of Mozambique and Madagascar, and spotted throughout other parts of Africa too. Now, officially, when you look at the statistic, the animists fall under the ethnic other. Traditional religions, animist, shamanist, spiritist, and those would be a significant part of the unreached people's groups that we need to reach. Now, you can also see, when you look at this, interestingly, the ethnic religions are decreasing. They are growing at less than the birth rate. So that's the world's population growth rate, and the tribalistic or animistic religions, what they call the ethnic religions there, are actually decreasing in time, present trends continuing. They will go extinct. Unfortunately, the influence is carried on through syncretism, where Buddhists, Hindus, Muslims, even Christians, are influenced more by animism than they would care to admit. Animism includes necrolatry, meaning the worship of the souls of the dead. Tribal people tend to regard departed ancestors as part of the clan, and they fear the harm that the departed can do to the living, especially they fear those who died unnaturally, that they'll come back and haunt them. You know, in English tradition, they've got haunted houses and things like that. As Daniel was mentioning, you've got haunted islands and so on, and some of the places of Lawsiland. So spirit worship is where traditional religions believe in the existence of personal spirits or demons, as well as impersonal spiritual forces of nature, which inhabit the earth, the air, fire, water, trees. So each of these natural elements has a spirit. And even the mountains and animal life. So life in them is dominated by a host of taboos and rituals to placate the spirit. Witch doctors, also known as shamans or priests, are expert mediators who know the proper incantations and sacrifices at times of sickness and disaster to placate the spirit, or to ensure that people get that job promotion they wanted, to get that, to win the lottery, to recover from AIDS, well, whatever it is. You know, they'll take your money and they'll promise you anything. So this is what witch doctors and shamans do the world over. They all use magic. Now, there's imitative magic, which seeks to bring harm to an enemy by taking a representation of them. For example, the voodoo doll, classic in Haiti, where this doll will represent, you know, put in the pin and twist it in the crystal, apparently meant to experience a sharp pain where they're doing this. And so there's imitative magic. Then there's contagious magic. The connection between a person and his hair clippings, nail clearings, sweat, spit, feces. Now, one of the interesting traditions that you get in the kingdom of Swaziland is that the only defeat that the Zulus ever suffered at the hands of the Swazi was when the Swazi kingdom managed to get, who knows how, some of the semen of Shaka Zulu, and the witch doctors used this to create a curse on the Zulu warriors that in their attack on Swaziland it actually failed. And so they record as a matter of history that it was this major coup of getting this contagious magic that they could put a curse on the unbeatable Zulu army, that the MPs were actually unable to defeat the Swazi for this reason. And you meant to accept that as fact. The blood of an animal or a person may be drunken or to gain the strength of an animal, or in the case of cannibalism, of that person. And Idi Amin, for example, killed and ate the heart and the liver and so on of the Archbishop of the Church of England in Uganda. And Mobutu Sese Seko and Samora Machel were known to engage in cannibalism, and so did Jomo Kenyatta, that they actually had cannibalistic feasts where they would actually eat the heart, the liver, and so on of the enemies, and this is meant to give them strength. And when you see human bones scattered around a fire, you know that cannibalism is being practiced. I took this picture in Rwanda of a church, Dasarama Church, where there were 1,200 corpses inside the church building, including skulls of people placed on the altar. The Holocaust murder was driven a lot by witchcraft, by hatred for Christianity, and of course very much aggravated by communism. This is the result of animism, sacrificial killing of the enemies, in this case the Tutsi minority tribe who were mostly Protestant Christians. Low-tech genocide. China provided these machetes, these pangas, a million of them to Rwanda, and these were distributed widely, and the Interahamwe mass murdering thugs in Rwanda used them to slaughter 800,000 people in 6 weeks. More people died with machetes in Rwanda in 8 weeks than died from atomic weapons in all of history combined. And the fear, the suffering that comes from it. And it, even today, you'll get, this soldier was offering me the skull of an Arab to take back and to put on my desk here at Frontline. I declined. I thought that would be very Macbethian. You know, to be or not to be, that is the question. How do you explain the customs going through with a skull in your luggage? And make no mistake, technology does not mean animism dies. Animism survives with technology. Fetishism. There's a superstitious belief that there's some spiritual energy or force and charms and amulets and fetishes. And sometimes you will see a person, even in Parliament, he's wearing a suit, got a Mercedes Benz and all this, but he puts out his hand and you can see, there's this fur skin around his wrist, or maybe around the ankle. And it's probably from a goat that was sacrificed by some witch doctor and it's got some spell. And then you'll see people have got all sorts of things. And the English have this strange thing, often having a rabbit's foot around their neck. And they think that they stroke the rabbit's foot for luck. As I said, if the rabbit's foot was lucky, it would still be on the rabbit. How on earth can that be lucky? There's some bizarre ideas out there. Then you get naturism, the personification and worship of forces of nature. For example, there are those who worship the sun. The Egyptians worship Ra, the sun god. There are those who worship the moon, the stars. People have got to read, what does my astrology chart say today? And people who worship fire, and people who worship volcanoes and storms and certain animals. In ancient Egypt was the sun. In India, the Hindus worship the sacred cow. And there's a sacred mountain of Shintoism in Japan. Naturism inevitably leads to idolatry. And to polytheism, the worship of many gods, because naturism often relates to fertility. Fertility cults, like in the Bible, we worship as a Baal and Asherah. These were fertility cults. You had to bring your child to sacrifice in order to increase your crops and herds and any other form of success. And so this is meant to bring prosperity either in your fields or in agriculture or even human reproduction. Then there's nature worship. Rituals and sacrifices intended to guarantee fertility. Human sacrifices are an extreme example of this. There's also totemism. Brother, sister, kin. The totem poles of the Indians in America. This emphasizes unity of the clan with some sacred plant or animals. And you will often see an owl, perhaps an eagle, or bears, and wolves. And so that these would symbolize, these are the spirit animals for this particular tribe. There are four characteristics of animism, or Buddhism. The whole of life is pervaded with and governed by fear. It's a whole lot of fear. Then there's an absence of love and hope. People feel very helpless and hopeless. They're absolutely at the mercy of the spirits of external forces. They do not feel that they're able to get themselves out of the situation. And one thing you also see is a lack of chivalry. The men carry next to nothing and the women are laden down with heavy burdens. That's not unusual. A very low view of women and a low view of work ethic as well. So you give all the work to the woman and the men might walk around carrying nothing. There's no moral absolutes. Sin is seen as a violation of cultural customs or spirit force. So here's a woman undergoing a ritual purification for adultery. Now there wasn't actual adultery, but it's just that in this case she cooked for another man a meal. And so that was called adultery, according to the tribal customs. So this animism is more like you broke a taboo rather than you violated a moral ethical standard like the Ten Commandments. And then there's fatalism, a sense of helplessness in the face of external forces. So, for example, we remember going to Zambia in the middle of the worst drought imaginable. And there were people within sight of the Zambezi River, within sight of one of the greatest rivers in the world. And their crops were dying and their children were starving. We said, why don't you irrigate from the river, canals? Oh no, the government must do that. Why don't you get buckets of water and carry it over? And you don't have to do it in the winter, in late afternoon, so that it's got all night to seep in before any evaporation can occur. Oh, the government's got to do it. But it's your children who are dying of starvation. And there's a sense of absolute helplessness. Even though there's a river within a few hundred yards, the sense of we need help from the government, or from the Americans, or from South, or from overseas, but we're unable to help ourselves. That is the result of an animistic mindset, where you feel absolutely powerless and helpless to help yourself. Everything comes from the outside. Heathenism does not deny God, but it actually more ignores God by worshipping natural forces. This woman here in Haiti is eating a live chicken or bird. The Bible is clear, Leviticus 19, do not practice divination or sorcery. Do not cut your bodies for the dead. Do not put tattoo marks on yourself. For I am the Lord. Do not turn to mediums or seek out spirits. You will be defiled by them. I am the Lord, your God. Leviticus 19, 26-31. We're also told, when you enter the land the Lord your God has given you, do not learn to imitate the detestable ways of the heathen. Let no one be found amongst you who sacrifices his son or his daughter in the fire, who practices divination or sorcery, who interprets omens or engages in witchcraft, or casts spells, or who is a medium or spiritist, or who consults the dead. anyone who does these things is detestable to the Lord. And because of these detestable practices, the Lord your God will drive out those nations before you. You must be blameless before the Lord your God. Deuteronomy 18 makes it crystal clear. Is there anything that's left out? I mean, every occultic practice is covered here. I don't think that these things just happen in Africa or Asia. My own father, when his mother died, he went to a clairvoyant to contact his mother through the crystal ball, calling up spirits, this sort of thing. And the Lord brought this to my remembrance as I was converted. And it's something I should repent of. Break this ancestral curse. I know that my father had even, I was with him when he decided to stop in Madibeland on the way to the Worldview Rhodes grave in the Matopos. And there was a village where there's a witch doctor advertised for the tourists, he'll throw the bones at you. And my dad, probably as a joke, went in and he came out really impressed. This man knew things that he couldn't have known. And, you know, there's a power here. And was impressed. But there's a lot of people who might come from a Christian background, but they are so far apostate that they will even go and consult clairvoyants, palm readers, crystal ball people, spiritists, witch doctors. Witch doctors is literally. You could go to the Colton Center in the 1980s and up at the tower, you could have a look over the whole of Johannesburg. They'd be selling witch doctor bones for the tourists. It's not funny. I mean, that's just so foolish to think that people want that. You go into people's homes and they've got Buddha statues and they've got all kinds of idol things they picked up in Thailand and Burma. And why would you want some idol or some false god in your home? And then I remember also being convicted by the Lord about I had quite a few of these face masks which I bought or bought at the side of the road in Zimbabwe. These face masks are often used like in Itaú. They are connected with witchcraft. And again, felt that these were cursed items and we put them in the fire. Because as a new Christian, things that God guided me that we need to repent of these things. I remember my mother going to transcendental meditation lessons to take me along. And where it's basically Hinduism. Transcendental meditation is Hinduism. And they give you the name of a Hindu god. They don't tell you it's the name of a Hindu god. But they give you a special name. You're meant to repeat this for 20 minutes a couple of times a day. Just meditate. Clear your mind of everything. And just focus on this name. And it's always the name of a Hindu god. You know, whether Krishna and Vishnu and so on and Shiva, and you mentioned Kali, and they're giving you different names, and people in TM or transcendental meditation are focusing on it. So there's a lot of this going on all over the place. The West is saturated with witchcraft now. Africa Maklopi wrote the book Christianity and the Veneration of Ancestors. Should a Christian consult the dead? I can tell you the clear answer is no. Christians should not be consulting the dead. It's forbidden. And unfortunately, one of the large denominations of the Zionist Christian Church, ZCC, they've mixed quite a lot of ancestral spirits, worship and traditions, and even animism with Christian principles. So you've got Christianity and witchcraft in a syncretism, like a mix. And the Zionists are very dedicated. If you can go to them and show them what the Bible teaches, many do get converted, but the point is that many of them are trusting in, effectively, animism, and that it's a Christianity and animism mixed together, like you will get in South America, the Roman Catholics and Voodooism. Very syncretistic, very mixed. An example of a country which has been dedicated to ancestral spirits is Haiti. As the Wall Street Journal noted in its article, Haiti and the Voodoo Curse, the cultural roots of the country's endless misery. Despite Haiti having received billions of dollars in foreign aid over the last 50 years, it remains the least developed country in the Western Hemisphere. Haiti has defied all developmental predictions. Operation World reports Haiti is the poorest state in the Western Hemisphere, with over 75% of the population living in less than $2 a day. Effective unemployment is about 70%. You can tell the difference between the Dominican Republic and Haiti. You don't need a map to tell you when you've crossed from Haiti into Dominican Republic. MAF told me that literally you could see the Dominican Republic is forested and Haiti, which shares the same island, is deforested. Take here some of the worst pollution, the worst drought, the worst famine, the most rapid rise of drug abuse, biggest spread of AIDS in the Western Hemisphere. An estimated 75% of the population of Haiti are actively involved in voodoo, or animals of witchcraft. Haiti is at the top of the corruption index. A full 25% of police are in the pay of the drug lords and gangs. A massive earthquake in 2010 was one of the worst natural disasters ever hit the Western Hemisphere, with over 300,000 died in the earthquake. Now, that earthquake, let me say, in that same year, was much smaller than an earthquake 10 times in intensity that hit Santiago in Chile, the capital city of Chile. I think two people died in Chile from an earthquake 10 times more intense than the one that killed 300,000 in Port-au-Prince in Haiti. What's the difference? Work it. The buildings in Port-au-Prince in Haiti were so shoddily made they collapsed and killed hundreds of thousands of people. The buildings are so well built in San Diego, Chile, that an earthquake 10 times more intensity did minimal damage and killed almost nobody. So, plainly, the worst natural disaster was actually man-made too, because shoddy workmanship in the building codes. At its inception in 1803, Haiti was dedicated to Satan.
Yep.
And in 2003, voodoo was declared the national religion of Haiti, and they again rededicated Haiti to Satan. The Wall Street Journal quotes Cameroonian development expert Daniel Etonga Manuel as observing voodooism is one of the principal obstacles to progress in Africa. Daniel Etonga Manuel observes Haiti's culture is powerfully influenced by its religion, voodoo. Voodoo is one of the numerous spirit-based religions common to Africa. Well, it's not as common in Africa as it used to be. It is without ethical concept. Its followers believe that their destinies are controlled by hundreds of capricious spirits who must be propitiated, appeased, through voodoo ceremonies. So animism is a progress-resistant force. The Wall Street Journal observes a Haitian child is made to understand that everything that happens is due to the spirits. He is raised to externalize evil. Evil isn't within the heart. Evil's out there. Evil spirits and so on. And to understand he's in constant danger. So Haitians are afraid of each other. You'll find a high degree of paranoia in Haiti. Animism is spirit worship. It involves necrolatry, the worship of the souls of the dead. The witch doctors are shamans. They're expert mediators. They know the proper incantations and sacrifices to placate the spirit by throwing the bones and so on. Animism is a religion that sees a spiritual force behind every event, and many objects in the physical world have some spiritual significance. Animism is obsessed with invoking good luck and avoiding bad luck. Each community is seen as having its own set of gods and spirits which are territorial. Fear plays a major role in the life of animists. They see the world as full of spirits and omens and spells and demons and forces, and through magic and divination and sacred rituals, they seek protection to appease the gods, the spirits, the ancestors. They observe numerous taboos and prohibitions and observe sacred places. So, for example, in Haiti, there's a sacred tree, they call it, where a pact of the devil was signed over 2 centuries ago, in 1803, by witch doctors. The animists here hold a host of objects as sacred and with sacred power. By the way, they complained a while ago that their sacred tree had been desecrated by the Christians who came and had a prayer meeting there and broke the power of the spirits over that area, so it no longer is what it used to be. And so they're complaining about the Christians daring to have a prayer meeting and breaking the curse that was placed there by people 200 years ago. They recognize sacred persons and observe sacred actions. So one of these are the circumcision rituals of young men in the Xhosa tribe. Many hundreds of men have died from these dangerous circumcision rituals. During World Cup 2010, much publicity was given to a Burmese rock python owned by Sangoma in Yanga. It was alleged that this python was able to communicate to the Sangoma which team would win each match, and gamblers paid the Sangoma for the predictions. The SBC found the snake to be underweight, suffering from dehydration, mouth rot, and pneumonia, and they confiscated the python to give it medical care. The Sangoma, the 25-year-old Siabongo Matwetwe, said the SBC does not understand Sangomas. Everything I said does not make sense to them, he said, which is probably true. The High Court in Pietermaritzburg found 28-year-old Smangalisa Ngubane guilty of murder for having slaughtered a 17-month-old baby in a ritual killing. Amina Zaba was stabbed by her father 6 times in what state witnesses described as an offering to his ancestors. Ngubane testified he heard voices that told him he should do this. Voices in your head are not necessarily the voice of God. 2 teenage girls in Johannesburg were doused with petrol and set alight in a satanic ritual. The provincial police spokesman reported that the girls were tied up by their friends. Friends? What kind of friends are those? And burned in what appeared to be a satanic ritual. The story quoted Isabella Little of Teenage Advice Forum in Life Talk that Satanism is not spoken about very often. It isn't, but it's real. She mentioned an incident in Cape Town where a mother reported a teenage daughter kidnapped, taken to some satanic church where another teenager was murdered. She managed to escape, but she was very traumatized. I'll bet. Police investigated the incident, but it was never mentioned in the media. We always hear rumors about Satanism, but it's not something people are talking about. We would like them to come forward so this can come into the open. In Uganda, the government is setting up posters in playgrounds and on roadsides warning about the danger of abduction by witch doctors for child sacrifice. Police have investigated hundreds of cases of child sacrifice in Uganda. The mutilated bodies of children have been discovered at roadsides. The anti-human sacrifice task force, but not the anti-human trafficking task force, the anti-human sacrifice task force, reports as a grave belief that when you sacrifice a child, you get wealthy. There are people willing to buy these children to be sacrificed for the prosperity of the business. And this has been proven. The BBC did an expose on this where a businessman went and paid money, and the witch doctor was explaining that you can either bury the child's body under the foundation of your building, or we can cut out the different parts and positions. And it's all explained on camera. Of course, he didn't know he'd be undercover filmed. This is part of an expose by BBC investigative journalism team. The UK-based charity Jubilee Campaign reports they know of over 900 cases of human sacrifice in the country. Churches are singing a song, "Heal Our Land, End Child Sacrifices." Isn't that sad? This BBC undercover reporter filmed a local witch doctor explaining how the sacrifice of a child is the most powerful spell. This witch doctor was recorded saying there's 2 ways we can do this. We can bury the child alive on the construction site, or we can cut them in different places and put the blood in bottles of special spiritual medicine or muti. You can even see these kind of posters on lampposts around Cape Town. You can get money. Dr. Uber pays best prices for all your body parts and organs. And there's different amounts of money for your eyes, your breast, your tongues, rhino parts, and testicles, hands, kidneys, up to 3,800 rand for kidneys and so on and so forth. And so they advertise, now what do you think is going to happen? It's like these scrap metal places. People steal copper and metal off your gates and everything else, and next thing you know, people's taps are pouring because they've stolen the taps of somebody's garden. Well, you offer money for body parts for witchcraft, well, what do you think is going to happen? We're going to kidnap people. Especially those who are runaways or those who are hitchhiking, they get taken to a van and never seen again. This sort of thing is happening. Sindhubedi Spotka Kamasina of the National Executive Committee of Traditional Healers Association claimed the roads of South Africa are haunted because whites have not fetched spirits of the dead from roadside accident scenes. He explained the growing Christian tradition of placing roadside memorial crosses and placing flowers at the scene of an accidental death stops the soul of the deceased from departing from that location. And he claimed that roadside memorials are causing accidents because the white people do not appease their loved ones' spirits. He explained that in African traditions, the spirit of death is brought back home from the scene of the dead. Some use a branch from a young tree to seep up the spirit and to take it to the body, which must be buried in an ancestral area. So, for example, despite me having worked in Khayelitsha many times over the last 28 years, I don't think I've ever seen a cemetery there. There might be a cemetery there, but every time I know someone who dies in Khayelitsha, the body gets transported back to Transkei to be buried in the Eastern Cape. And so Again, it's the idea that you've got to be buried in your ancestral home, unless they're absolutely poverty-stricken. People will bankrupt themselves and get into debt for years in order to transport the body of someone who died away from their traditional homeland back to where they should be. And so these and many other examples remind us animism is real. And the consequence of dedicating a nation like Haiti to ancestral spirits is very serious. The scriptures are clear. You shall not practice divination or soothsaying. Give no regard to mediums and familiar spirits. Do not seek of them to be defiled by them. I am the Lord your God. You shall not learn to follow the abomination of those nations. There shall not be found among you any who makes a son or daughter pass through the fire, or who practices witchcraft, or soothsaying. You know, the World Council of Churches had a, was it 1983? They had a major conference in Canada, World Council of Churches, and they had Indian shamans, witch doctors, prepare a fire, sacred fire, and all the delegates to the World Council of Churches conference had to pass through the smoke of a fire to enter into the conference hall. And they had a big totem pole in the entrance, which they gave to the General Secretary of the World Council of Churches, brought it back to Geneva and put it in the foyer of the World Council of Churches, this witchcraft totem pole from Indian witch doctors in Canada. This is the kind of idiocy that goes on. And by the way, at that World Council of Churches conference, there were multiple incidents of rape and sexual abuse and all that sort of thing by these so-called ministers and heads of denominations, or should I say abominations. So what Conrad was saying in his presentation earlier today is sadly pretty widespread. It's not a Zambian problem, it's all over the place. All those who do these things are an abomination to the Lord. Because of these abominations, the Lord your God drives them out before you. You must be blameless before the Lord your God. For these nations which you dispossess, listen to soothsayers and diviners, but as for you, the Lord has not appointed such for you. So scripture clear, we are not able to communicate with the spirits of departed ancestors. It is appointed unto men once that I am off that space judgment. So who are we speaking to in these sayings? There's a great gulf set between the living and the dead. Communication between them is impossible, we learn, from the teachings of Christ in Luke 16. There's a great gulf. It cannot be bridged. There was this rich man who died, who had ignored Lazarus at his gates, and now he wanted to go back and warn his brothers and his father. There's a great gulf set between them, which cannot be bridged. Who are we talking to when they are saying you're talking to your ancestral spirits? It's either fraud or it's a demon. Many people who think they're communicating with ancestral spirits are actually communicating with deceptive demons, unclean spirits, evil spirits, fallen angels who've rebelled, who now in darkness bound for judgment. Their power is limited. They serve the devil, the prince of the darkness, the prince of the power of this age. This, by the way, is English people who turn their back on their Christian heritage of centuries and are going back to Stonehenge, pilgrimage, worshipping as the Druids, the ancestral spirits. This is a problem everywhere. This is not just a problem. In fact, you've got a higher percentage of Christians in Africa than you have now in Europe. In Europe, there's more people following animism these days than percentage-wise than there are in Africa. Occult practice honors Satan rather than God. Occultism makes the enemies of God the guiding forces and the source of knowledge. Those who are giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrine of demons actually depart from the faith. We're commanded not to learn the way of the heathen. Now, just by way of cross-cultural communication examples, a good friend of mine, Reverend Father Savisi of Cross Evangelical Mission, he said to me, you know what animists think when they see you white people having bright faces? I think you're worshipping the spirits of your ancestors. Because it seems every home of every Afrikaner, it's got an altar. And on this altar, they will sacrifice meat. And there will be a prayer. And there will be only members of the clan at this sacrifice. And so obviously, these altars, now you condemn our worshipping ancestors. But why? You worship your ancestors too, don't you? And if you're an animist, that's what you would see. I mean, are bright places not sacrificing the spirits of the ancestors? Now, I'm a moth, member of the Memorial Order of the Tin Hats. Now, the moths, it dates back to the First World War. This is the first moth hall built. That's in Old Fort Street in Durban, and Old Fort Road. Now, the moths, of course, are very big on We Will Remember It. And there's memorials all over the world for soldiers who died in the First and Second World War, all the other wars. Now, we know what we do. When we go and we lay a wreath and we stand in silence and so we are remembering the sacrifice made by people in the past. But what does an animist see when he sees this? They're worshipping their ancestors. I mean, is that not the way it looks? If you are into ancestor worship, will you not assume that's what's been done? Well, here's a little one. Someone who studied college with me went to the Congo. And, of course, there's no privacy there. People come and they look in your cupboards and under your bed and want to go know what's in the kitchen and so on. And after a while, nobody would speak to them and nobody would come to their services. And this couple of had spent years preparing to go to the Congo War. What is the matter? What's gone wrong? They said, one person who was willing to tell them, you have many tins in your home. You've got tins of meat. You've got a picture of a cow on the outside, the inside's beef, and you eat it. And of guavas, and pineapples, and peaches. And look what you're feeding your children. Gerber baby food. There you've got a picture of a baby's head on the outside. And you're feeding your children baby brains. I mean, why would you have a picture of a baby on the outside of the tin if that's in the context? So again, they might have done something wrong, but the miscommunication. One of our favorite places of ministry over the years has been the Church of Scotland Hospital in Tregennaferry. Now, it's called COSH, Church of Scotland Hospital. Reverend James Dalzell established the Gordon Memorial Mission in Tregennaferry, and this is a very remote area. You can travel about 100 kilometers in any direction before you find another hospital. This is a very, and Masinga district, very violent. They would deal with 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 gunshots or stab wounds a day. And this isn't political, this is just normal faction fighting. These people are serious. And one of the tribes in the Masinga district, all the men have their top parts of their small finger cut off and to indicate they're part of the tribe. And, there's a lot of violence there. Anyway, so this great missionary who planted the Church of Scotland Hospital, when he died in Scotland, in his retirement, in his will, he said that he wanted to be cremated, and his ashes brought back and sprinkled on a Tugela River close to the hospital, which he founded, the Church of Scotland Hospital. Well, doubtless he's a good man, and doubtless his intentions are good, but that caused untold damage to the work of the gospel in the Singer district at Tugela Ferry. Because the ministers of Tugela Ferry went to Durban Airport, received the ashes and urn, drove back in convoy, gathered in the chapel, sang hymns, remembered this wonderful man and what he'd done for them. Then they went in procession singing, and they scattered the ashes on the Tugela River. But what did the local people who were animists, who weren't Christians, think? Muti, witchcraft. They put a curse on the community. They've taken the ashes of this man and they've sprinkled it on the lifeblood of this community, the river, where we do all our washing and cleaning, or all the water for drinking and cooking. And they've put this curse, this strong Muti, this spell on that. And you condemn us for witchcraft. And look what you're doing. And so, through short-sightedness, not from malice, it wasn't sin maybe before God, but it caused a lot of damage to the community. The Bible teaches us not to fear Satan or humans, but to stand up against him in the strength of the Lord. For God did not give us the spirit of fear, but a power of love and of a sound mind. Submit yourselves to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you.